and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, October 8th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us to send us email. We'll be answering those emails and phone calls in about 15 minutes, and I'll give that information out again when I ask your participation. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks, Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning.
Morning, Lyle.
Before we take phone calls from our listeners and emails as well, let's do some news. I'm going to start with Miles.
Well, of course, top of the news this week would be that the XPRIZE has been claimed, the $10 million XPRIZE from Ansari, which states that a commercial vehicle, if it can get into space, gets $10 million. Of course, they spent somewhere between $20 and $30 million to do it, but that wasn't the point. But also in related news is that other teams that were working toward the XPRIZE and now are shut out of the $10 million prize, such as the Da Vinci Group, Armadillo Aerospace, Canadian Aero, and Star Chaser, they've all made significant progress, and they have shown no signs of stopping. So it looks like there's still going to be competition in the area.
Interesting. They're so they're going to still do it even though they can't get the prize.
Well, all of them are spent more money than the prize
right.
money was going to be. So,
why stop when you're ahead?
Right. And, well, it's also, someone can get their vehicle to go up if they do it for cheaper than Starship One
right.
or if they do it in just a slightly different way where their configuration helps in some niche area.
I love it. I mean, that's exactly what the prize was for, was to produce a whole industry of people trying to do this, and that's what it's done.
Not the least of which is just pioneering spirit.
That's right. Great. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that story. And I had heard quite a bit about the prize and everything this week, but I appreciate the geek perspective. Sean?
Yeah, this week was SeaTac in Tokyo.
What is CEATEC?
It's CEATEC, an acronym I think stands for Consumer Electronics and Technology.
Okay.
Something show, that sort of
thing. Is a consumer electronics show?
Yeah, it's a big one in Japan, and as we all know, the Japanese love consumer electronics. Some of the coolest in the world are, well, only available in Japan.
Right, right. Some of their phones are quite impressive,
yeah.
For example.
So, of course, a lot of companies announced products there, Japanese companies in particular. Mitsubishi announced the Scopo, a headset with a small eye-level LCD, liquid crystal display,
mm-hmm.
that basically provides their viewing experience it's like a 10-inch screen.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, so it's a headset and a small belt-carried unit that allows you to watch video and it's supposed to be pretty
now,
nice.
Now, is that going to be out in the U.S. at some point?
That's probably doubtful.
Okay. What else was interesting at the show?
Sanyo has released the HD Gorilla. It's a navigation device and DVD player that with a 20-gigabyte hard drive and a GPS receiver.
Ooh.
That you can put into your car.
Cool.
And it's got a headset or a headrest unit. When it's in the headrest unit, you can actually watch DVD movies. So that's for people sitting in the back seat.
Right, right. So it's behind
you
the headrest.
You can move the unit as you need it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I guess the gorilla name consists of a cartoon gorilla. represents a car and a person in motion. I don't know. HD Gorilla.
Okay.
That's from Sanyo. Panasonic, they're showing up some interesting stuff. A wall-sized touchscreen.
Wall-sized?
Yeah. That serves as a television, email, multiple video streams, and games for video conferencing. And, of course, the background wallpaper can be changed to suit your mood.
When we say wall size, we mean?
4.5 meters by
Whoa.
Almost 2 meters.
Whoa.
And this is interesting. They showed off a kitchen table with 4 embedded LCD screens.
Yeah, I don't know how good that would be. I think someone needs to donate a version of that just so we can demo that. You know, just to check out those claims.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We could meet around the geek table.
I like the table with embedded LCDs, but that wall monitor, man. Woo!
Geek Knights of the round table. The LCD round table. Basically, it allows you to check your calendar, messages, you know, pictures.
Right, right. It's a large monitor with touchscreen interface.
Just where do you put your dish when you're eating, you know?
Right, exactly. Over the disc.
So Sharp has announced a network, Aquos? An LCD television that can receive high-definition video via wireless Wi-Fi. They're looking more towards senior citizens, people who are not so computer savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And Toshiba is producing some laptop PCs with thick LCD screens that function as a TV or stereo, even when the computer's off.
Oh, interesting. Why thick?
Yeah.
That's
you
weird.
Know,
okay.
I don't know.
You know... So there's a lot of stuff.
I guess you really have
show.
To see this stuff to really understand what uses it would be.
Do you know
used
if
for.
Our own traveling geek visited this show, Chris Dunphy?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
We'll have to check on that. I'd like to hear some first.
Yeah, Toshiba also announced Gigabeat. They're competing with Apple's iPod. They're coming out with the 60 gigabyte version, which is
okay.
Even
so maybe
even
wait on getting
bigger.
An iPod
yeah.
now.
And Sony's introduced a really small handheld computer. Used powered by Intel Celeron M called the Type U, and also there are some cell phones that can now broadcast that can receive TV signals. Those were being shown as well by Sanyo.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for the update on what's going on in the consumer electronics world, Miles. Yeah.
It's not every day that a out of court settlement can make the news, but Sun has. Paid off Kodak with $92 million for a patent infringement lawsuit. Basically, what it entails is that in exchange for spending this money, that they have cross-licensing deals where they agree not to sue each other.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The news behind this, though, is that this is about a patent that the Kodak patent was describing a program that can ask for help or assist another program. It's particularly vague, and a lot of folks were hoping that Sun would actually fight this one. And
yeah.
It's basically a bunch of patents that are basically what a lot of people have an issue with is that you have these patents that are so wide-ranging or so vague that it's hard to do anything. So basically large companies are able to have cross-licensing deals, just simply, you know, pay off the other guy. You have this, you know, this network of companies that have a cross-licensing deal, but someone who's trying to start a new company or has a new innovative idea
mm-hmm.
can get nickel and dimed and, or for that matter, just outright crushed for some patent lawsuit.
Right, right.
So,
but they're not fighting it.
Sun simply Sun's just, yeah, I mean, Sun has followed a current model.
Right.
And the sad part about it is when you think of, for example, a company like Microsoft, that next year they were talking about making 6,000 patent applications. And last year, I believe, was something like 3,000 or 2 or 3,000. And not to single out Microsoft, because they're not
all the large companies do this.
Yes, they're all doing this. That it's not possible for you or I or some independent software vendor to be able to sit down and read all these patents, assuming that, you know, we had the abilities of a patent lawyer.
Right. So what you're saying is if I wanted to write an application and package it up and give it off to people, I'd probably infringe on patents, and I would be taken off the market.
If you have large companies each doing a few thousand patent applications every year, the idea that you'd be able to avoid every single possible variation
no
of a patent, especially when they're vague and
yeah. Man. So basically,
unclear.
It's kind of all this patenting is basically killing application development for money.
Right. This is an area where I really believe that listeners should go and – if you believe that it's not a big deal, then that's
fine. Don't worry
about it. Well, then contact your congressman and say, I don't believe this is a big deal. But if you do think this is a big deal, contact your congressman or your senator and say, this is a big deal. I want you to make some legislation.
Deal with it. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Miles. I'm going to do a story. I just ran into this great little thing about, you know, I think it's wonderful when when companies are formed in technology arenas, and I look at the company and go, you know, it's a great idea, and I know I never would have thought of it. And the reason this one, I never really thought of it, is it's this company, and I guess they're now called, the startup's called Touchdown, is making small PCs that fit into football helmets. Now, I'm not a football fan, and therefore I probably would never have thought of this, but basically, there's a lot of people making computers that fit into weird configuration. It's normally called modding. And what this group decided to do, while they're building out a mod, they noticed a football helmet and went, God, it'd be so cool if I could buy a computer that was a football helmet of the team I like. And so this company, Touchdown, is making them. They're pretty inexpensive. They're small form factor using mini ITX, 6.5 inch by 6.5 inch motherboard made by VIA Technologies. And they're using, the machine can have a Pentium 4 inside it. And it's a fully functioning computer that's the size of a helmet, which is pretty small. And, of course, for some people, that a football team helmet is a really pretty thing to have on the desk, so it makes a lot of sense. And, of course, you can't wear the helmet. It's fully stocked with a computer.
Wait a minute. I'm picturing when you open up the CD or DVD drive, it hits the guard.
Yeah, I guess the guard moves or something. I know. I want to see a picture. But
you have to lift the guard to get your disk.
That or it goes through the eye hole.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe through the eyes.
Maybe,
you know, and the hard drive's down the mouth grill.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, a helmet does sit pretty nicely on a table. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of cables and stuff out the back, and, of course, there's going to have to be holes cut in it for fans. But supposedly you can take most helmets and modify them pretty easily and put them on this case.
Well, they got a fair amount of space.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take out the padding that obviously a computer doesn't need, then...
Right. Yeah, kind of cool.
Huh.
And I was just with Miles, so I'll go over to Sean.
Speaking of VIA, they have announced at the Microprocessor Forum this last week in San Jose that they will be building a 64-bit chip. That'll be compatible with AMD and Intel's 64-bit architecture.
Who's going to be doing this?
VIA.
Okay.
If for those of you who don't know who VIA is, they're a company out of Taiwan who provides, or famous for providing chips, other chips that go on the motherboard, or even full motherboards.
Motherboard designs.
Yeah. And they've been in the processor market for quite a while. They purchased Centaur Technologies, and who produced the Cyrix, and now they're kind of producing chips as well. The code name for this one is called Isaiah.
Yeah, so basically they're the guys behind the scenes that you never hear about that make your computer work.
Yeah,
Sean,
yeah.
You used to work for AMD, and you currently work at Transmeta, and they're both manufacturers of Intel compatible, IBM compatible chips. You think it's a good market to get into?
As a company, for companies?
Yeah.
No.
So why are they doing it? Why is VIA doing it?
They've been in the market for a while.
Okay.
What's nice about VIA is they can provide total solutions. They can provide basically motherboard chipsets and processors.
Like this company that's making football helmets.
Yeah.
Using
that board is actually available at stores.
Right. So if you want a really small computer, you can actually get
you can
one.
Actually,
the shuttle. Does the shuttle use those too?
Yeah, shuttle uses some VIA boards.
Okay, it's time to invite people to call in and everything. So we're going to keep doing news as we don't get calls, but because we're here and we can take calls on Linux and Windows and Macintoshes, we'll probably get people calling in. And if you're one of those people that have a question with technology, please call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And now for people that can't speed listen. 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. The first call we've got is from Santa Cruz. Richard, I don't know if we're going to be able to help you out, but we'll try. Hi, Richard. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, well, you guys have a cool show, man. I really like your show.
Well, thanks. You might not like it after we don't answer this question effectively. So go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, well, I knew it was a can of worms, and when I called, I was like, oh, no, we're not actually going on the air with Bluetooth problems. But
I think it's time.
I figured, you know, I see what kind of advice, and maybe down the line, you know, when I listen, we'll see what's up. But basically, I have an Apple PowerBook running OS X.
Okay.
And I got a Palm T3.
Mm-hmm.
And I after I went through a little bit of struggle, I got all that to sync up, you know. But what I ended up doing is... somehow syncing up the Palm through Entourage, you know that.
Okay.
New, right.
So you're using Entourage as your your mail client. Are you also, and what about for calendaring?
The calendaring and everything seems to it all seems to go from the palm, like through mm-hmm. the entourage, or from the palm to entourage to my computer.
Okay.
When I say the palm, I mean the program.
Oh, the palm desktop.
The program on the computer.
Okay.
Through entourage, through some kind of a sync that I downloaded.
Okay.
I found this missing link or something.
Does something start up called iSync?
Yeah, now I have I have iSync, and I downloaded this other thing, an iSync palm conduit.
Good.
And but I still can't seem to figure out how to get the phone to talk to the computer.
Okay.
Or the
So here's the deal. Your phone and your palm device can talk to each other to make phone calls, and that's a different story completely. The syncing ability to put the phone numbers on your phone,
mm-hmm.
Palm.
On your palm. He's got the palm thing worked out. So the phone number's on the phone. You want to get them on the phone for some reason?
Yeah, I'd like to get all my contacts
Does your phone have Bluetooth?
Yeah, it's a Motorola V710.
There's another way to do this. Instead of syncing your address book inside your phone to your computer and having all the information on your phone, you could just make the phone calls from your palm.
Hmm.
If it's got Bluetooth.
Okay.
So there's a possibility. I don't know the details of it, but what phone do you have?
The Motorola V710 is some kind of new Motorola came out. It's the first Verizon Bluetooth phone, so I don't know, you know.
Okay. We've watched Chris Dunphy, who's our resident palm expert and a director at Palm Source, actually with his handheld, his palm, make a phone call to a cell phone and then talk through his Bluetooth
headset.
Hmm.
So... But then again, maybe having the phone numbers right inside your phone is a good thing.
It's probably a good idea.
So here's the deal. You want to sync your phone with your computer, and you want to sync your palm with your computer. But the phone and the palm do not need to sync to each other. So that's one thing.
You might want to try just syncing exactly
right.
The phone to the computer.
So what are you, on your computer, when you want to look at a phone number that's on your palm, are you opening up Palm Desktop, or are you opening up something like address book in...
Entourage.
Entourage has an address book. Okay. All right, so...
It's kind of like Outlook.
It's like a full suite kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just like their new thing. So pretty much everything, let me just pull that up.
Okay,
it has everything, really. Everything that's on Palm is kind of on here.
Right.
There's a little bit of, the only conflicts are between sometimes work, phone number, whatever. You have to put it in the right state.
What I would strongly suggest, if you're using OS X, is to drop Entourage, go with Address Book, which is built into OS X, and Mail, which is built into OS X.
You might not necessarily need
because
to do that.
Because then your iSync conduit is going to be functioning a lot easier. Doing it that way, you have to deal with Entourage having the conduit path being through iSync, which is an Apple product, into Microsoft's Entourage thing, and linking that way. And that gets more complicated, and I don't know the answer for it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us here do.
Yeah, of course you could try, like Lyle was suggesting, using the Mac stuff just to verify that it works.
Yeah, I would definitely
do that.
And
then switching back to Entourage once you know that a certain piece of it is working.
Like, it's possible right now when you do sync your phone that your phone information is syncing with the address book built into OS X. That might be happening right now, and that's why it doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah,
there's no data in there.
That's what I think is happening, because the iSync has, like, limited phone numbers in it, you know. And that's why I wanted to kind of check with you guys, because that's what I think it is. Because the reason I use Entourage is because it's really good for work, because that way I have my email accounts and all
that. Of course, you can use all the Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, and I can be offline and work. And that was the idea there, and then I got that to sync with the Palm, and then I was like, all right, I just got to get the phone, and the phone will hook up.
Why don't you, if you can confirm that the phone is syncing with your address book, the Mac address book, go ahead and look into Conduit Manager. Look at the iSync settings, and also, because in iSync you should probably see a conduit that's for Entourage and a conduit that's for your palm and a conduit that's for your phone. And they need to link together correctly. And that's where the problems are happening.
All right, cool.
So open up iSync to do that.
And
then if you can get your phone to sync its address book with... address book, which is on Apple, then all you have to do is do an export every once in a while from Entourage into your address book application and sync your phone. Because you're never going to be entering phone numbers into your phone, most likely.
Right.
So there's a thought.
Sure. All right, cool. That's good.
Okay.
That's good ideas.
I was going to say, send us an email at geeks@geekspeak.org.
Yeah, we'll get Chris Dunphy on.
Chris Dunphy could totally handle this.
Yeah, definitely, Richard. Thanks for the call.
Hey, I appreciate your advice.
All right.
Thanks.
We're going to go ahead and go to Santa Cruz again for a call. We only have one person online right now, so you can call in if you'd like to get in the queue, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can send us email by going to geekspeak.org.
We have an email question.
We have one of those, too. Okay, well, let's go to Woody, because he's sitting here on hold. Woody in Santa Cruz, welcome to Geekspeak.
Hi there. Well, first off, just want to say thank you for the show. Find it very helpful and informative, and appreciate you guys sharing your expertise. My question is about ink printers for like photo printers.
Mm-hmm.
I bought recently a Canon i9100. It's a nice printer. It makes pretty large scale. It's got six inks. The Canon inks are extremely expensive. I mean, I guess all inks are. And I'm wondering about off brands. And actually, I got some generics through a mail order place. And the first round went fine, but I reordered and got a second round, and my nozzle clogged up, and I had to have it replaced. I don't know if it's related or not. I'm just wondering if you could speculate on that. Do you need to stay away from generic inks? Do you have to go with the name brand like Canon or Epson or whatever?
No, you can go with generic inks. I don't think there's a problem with it. The one thing that I'm unsure about generic inks is lots of times the companies will talk about the archivability of the photos.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I don't know the stories behind the generic inks. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the generic inks are most likely the same material as the Raptor, the one that has the commercial brand on it.
Uh-huh.
Don't have a confirmation on that, but that's my general belief.
Well,
now, about the clogging of the jet?
The nozzle. I did, like, a deep cleaning. And pattern, and, I started getting, like, stripes across the photo. And then I looked, I did the nozzle check, they call it, and it prints out a pattern. And you could see where,
it wasn't printing.
Yeah, there was, I guess, kind of a checkerboard sort of pattern of sorts.
Yeah, sounds like the ink to me.
Yeah, and so the ink cartridge actually has the nozzle in it, so swapping out the ink cartridge would fix the problem.
Oh, well, actually, I don't know. There's a, this Canon has a kind of a lift-out head.
Really?
The inks, it's kind of, I think, maybe a good design, just because you don't have to send the whole thing back if there's a problem or whatever, but the nozzles are kind of all held in the tanks are all held in a tray. And that tray has a nozzle in the bottom of them.
Right.
Anyway, that's what they sent me to replace it. And I haven't reloaded it. And as I said, the first round, the inks went, and it was so much cheaper, and I was really happy. But then the second round, started getting clogged, and I was wondering if that was related.
Could you clean the head, or did you have to send it in?
No, I tried doing, there's a deep cleaning function, which I guess just, sends lots of ink through it. And it never cleared up, and actually I was still under warranty, and they sent me one. So I didn't.
Are you still under warranty?
Yeah.
Go ahead and try the cheap gas.
Try the cheap again.
Yeah.
So you don't think there's an issue with the cheaper inks? I mean, the off-brand ink?
I personally don't. I don't understand how this printer has a second head. Normally, the printer heads are actually part of the ink cartridge. Is that, Miles?
Part of the
Sean,
ink cartridge?
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's how it is with my HP.
Yeah. That's why the ink cartridges are so expensive, is because they actually have the printer head in there. But
oh, no, well, this
different.
Is, like I said, I actually didn't open the box, but it, Canon sent it to me, and it's like I said, it's the i91. It's one of their photo printers. It's
right.
Like, it will do 13 by 19.
Right.
So it's kind of higher end.
I don't know
device. If maybe, the nozzles might be more.
It has microfine droplet technology. It sounds to me like, this is a big printer, right?
A what?
It prints 13 by 19.
Yeah, 13 by 19.
Borderless prints.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a nice printer.
It is.
I got some photos if you don't mind printing them for me.
Yeah.
No. I seem to think that maybe it is the printer.
The ink. Yeah.
Oh, the ink. You do.
Yeah.
You know, my day job is at UCSC, and we have a whole print room called The Cave, and it's where all the art students print their work from computers.
Uh-huh.
And there we have... we have Epson printers, but we use generic inks, and we put them inside these containers with small tubes going to the printer. So you've got a giant pool of ink,
a
big bottle of all different colors of ink,
right.
And they get pulled in from the printer. And to prep them correctly, the guy that does it, Peter Harris, who's gone right now, but he has become kind of an expert on ink dealing with inks. And the way he's doing it now is actually filtering the inks using coffee filters to get any kind of particulate matter out of it.
Right.
And he says that now that he's doing that, he also has a different kind of filter that's very similar to coffee filters, but he rolls them himself, and can pull all the ink out of it. Now, if you went to a feed like that, then you can actually deal with the ink yourself.
Yeah.
You can clean it pretty well.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to be able to do all that. I'm not going to have that elaborate setup.
Yeah,
I'm probably sticking with the tanks, but I really liked, because it was about a quarter of the price.
Right,
But as I said, if it's clogging your head, I was at Fry's, and I really take everything at Fry's with a grain of salt because they'll tell you, you know, whatever. But the guy was going, oh, no, it's a photo printer, and the photo, I mean, you can get away with generics on a not a photo printer, but a photo printer is a finer head or something. Is that,
it's very possible this head is finer.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
I'm really surprised that you're having trouble with inks. I mean, the other thing is, you know, it's very possible that if the ink sits around for long enough, it will produce small particulate matter inside it, and that's exactly the problem. So it could be that the ink is, like your second set of ink was old or it sat on the shelf a little longer. You want fresh ink for a
break. Could be,
sounds like we're losing you. I'm going to go ahead and drop you,
Okay.
But thank you for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck. Well, we do have Tom from Bonnie Doon. Tom, welcome to Geek Speak.
Got a problem with my email, and that is I'm running Netscape 6.1 as my browser and email system.
Okay.
And my ISP made a big change in their systems, and I got a new username, user ID, and password.
And you actually have those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Now, when they switched over the systems, suddenly my inbox is all blank. It's a new inbox.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had about 800 good messages that I was archiving on the old system.
When
do I get it back?
When they switched it to for you, or when you went through the process of switching, did you create a new profile in Netscape? Do you remember saying something like that?
A new profile.
You wouldn't necessarily create a new profile. You'd create a new email account.
Yeah.
So the old one, but you deleted the old one? Or
no, I didn't delete anything.
You remember what kind of email account it was? Was it POP3 or IMAP?
POP3.
Okay, so they're on your machine, I think. I think what you probably have is two profiles on Netscape, because Netscape deals with different accounts as different profiles.
I don't believe it's a profile
Netscape
issue.
Netscape 6.1, though, we're talking
about. I know, but I don't believe it's a profile issue. It's the same profile, just because you can have multiple email accounts.
Yeah. Is there a place where you're seeing folders listed?
Yeah.
Okay, and in that space, does it start with your new email address at the top of it, the list of folders? Does anyone have do any of the geeks here have Netscape 6.1?
Even that can be different, though, because that's going to be just the key name that you put in.
All right, Miles, what do you think?
What I think is that the instructions, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that the instructions that your ISP gave you were to create a new email account with the new mail settings.
Yeah.
Which means that your old email account, all that mailbox is still on your hard drive, still there, just it's not accessible because you created this new one.
Yeah.
Tom, are you on a Windows machine?
No, I'm on a Mac.
Okay. OS 9?
OS 9.
Okay. In a Mac OS 9, your mail is actually stored. I'm going back here in time trying to figure this out. If anyone out there knows this, the phone number is 476-2800, or you can email us.
What I'm wondering, when you changed the email settings, did you create did you go through the process of creating a new email account setting in Netscape Mail, or did you change the settings within the existing account? I know that seems fairly vague, but
I don't know which I did.
Do you have the instructions with you right now of what you were told to do?
I think so.
Okay, can you grab those real quick?
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and take a stab at this, too. I think on a Mac, OS 9, your mail folders are held inside preferences, as odd as that sounds. If you go into system folder and you open up, I think it's preferences inside system folder.
Wait, for the overall system? I don't think Netscape 6.1 was that well integrated.
Yeah, in a Mac it was, yeah. Preferences were pretty much held in preferences. Inside there is going to be a Netscape folder, and your mail folder should be inside there. You won't be able to really open them necessarily. Well, the text files, you should be able to open them. There's no other place really on a Mac. On Mac OS 9, there weren't really the idea of separate users. There were, but it was kind of a kludge. So that's where they'd be. Tom, you got that document yet?
No, I have to leave the phone to get it.
Okay, you know what? My feeling is, in Netscape, I remember in Netscape 6, the big deal was profiles. If you made a new profile, if the thing says you made a new profile, what you need to go into your preferences and find a section that talks about profiles. And there's going to be a thing saying auto use a profile, and the other profile might still be there. If you use that other one, you'll see all your other mail. That's one way to go. If it doesn't talk about profiles at all, then you're talking about a new account in the same profile. What you need to do, again, go into your preferences and see if that second account is there. If it's not there, then you've got to find your mail on the file system. You can't use Netscape. You're kind of stuck. And then what you want to do is, if you remember your mail, your username, for example, it might, and you do a find on your computer, you might find it. But I would check under System Folder, Preferences, Netscape. In there somewhere should be mail stuff. If you find a file that's really, really big, that's probably your mail file.
Yeah, or for that matter.
And if you double-click it, you might actually get Netscape to open it.
Frankly, I'm actually thinking if your ISP gave you instructions and you followed those instructions exactly and they lost your mail, call your ISP and
definitely.
Say, what happened to my mail?
Tom, who is your ISP?
Sasquatch.
Okay, so it's Cruise.io.
Pardon me?
Isn't Sasquatch
one of the Sasquatch is a
own company?
Different group.
Definitely contact them. See if they can walk you through it.
Yeah.
Well, I did, but I didn't get any satisfaction.
Well, you know what? You can send email to your new account. Go ahead and send us an email, Tom. Just send an email to Geeks.
Or go to the website.
Or go to the website, please. Go to the website and click on Contact Us. Go to geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us. Fill that out, and I'll call Sasquatch.
Oh, thank you.
You bet.
Right. They didn't seem to understand. The guy I talked to didn't understand Max.
Well, we'll work it out. I'll get it working for you, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we've got no messages on phone, so we're going to go to email. But just to remind people, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Santa Cruz County Elections Department is recruiting citizens to work at the election polls on Election Day, November 2nd, 2004. Qualified persons are needed to staff the 163 polling places throughout the country, county. Sorry. Call Tracy Rosenthal at Santa Cruz County Elections Department at 454-2060.
You're listening to Geek Speak.
This week on This American Life, Patrick was 27 when he got his first assignment as a young pastor. To take over for a priest who'd been accused of sexual abuse. The hardest part? Winning over the parish.
And they said, you know, Father, I'm really sad that you're here. We really liked, you know, the other monk. We don't think he should have been removed.
Living behind enemy lines. True stories. This week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
This is KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you've got questions or comments, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can fill out our email form at geekspeak.org. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland, both experienced geeks here for your support. We've got email. Sean?
Yeah, Joe from Santa Cruz has sent us an email. He wants to know, how do I calibrate my printer? I have an Epson 740 and the pictures are of terrible quality, even with new cartridges.
Yeah, Epson what?
740.
Is that relatively? Do you look it up?
Sure, I can.
Go ahead and look up the 740 while we're waiting.
But typically, you calibrate and clean your nozzles through your printer drivers.
Right. But
depending
color,
if you're
color
Windows
I'm
or
assuming,
Mac,
I'm assuming he's talking about color calibration. That's a real, you know, can of worms. If it's not color calibration, if it's like lining up calibration and such, then you go through your printer driver. But for color calibration, that's a whole ball of wax, unfortunately. And
haven't we had an entire show about that
before? Yeah, we have. It's just such a giant topic. It's not something we can really...
Well, are we talking about professional calibration or...
Well, you know...
Because the drivers, you can actually do a calibration through...
That's true.
Yeah, and basically what they do is they print out lines on a sheet and they give you different numbers to choose from, which looks the best.
Right.
And then you put that into your printer.
And that's all for alignment calibration.
Right.
Which is a very good thing. But for color, for like, you look at the image on screen, you're like, oh, that's beautiful. I want to see that. And then you print it, and it doesn't look like that at all.
If you want to try to do color matching with your pictures.
You basically need another device.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do.
You're going to want to get a color calibrating device that's a screen device.
I don't think he's basically saying his pictures are terrible quality. So
I would look at settings such like, are you printing at best quality or are you doing a Kano print? You know, there's different types of printing your printer can go into. Not something we can.
And
really
if you're in a Windows machine, just go to Start and Printers and Faxes, and you should access your printer that way.
You just double click
printer driver, right? And then right click on the printer and select Properties from inside the Printers and Faxes dialog, and in there it should give you calibration options.
Right, and
give
also
that and clean your nozzle
and what type of your default preferences as well of
right.
what quality print you should do. Play
right.
with that. Also, make sure that you're using paper. And when you're saying terrible, if you're like printing a photo, you want to use photo paper. It's a good thing to
makes
you know,
makes a big difference. Use regular paper; it's going
to
look really bad.
And sometimes the printer needs to know what paper you're using, or it's going to be really problematic. Like if it's trying to put enough ink to fill a really saturatable paper versus a really glossy paper, it's going to put the wrong type of ink down, and you're going to get a total mess. So make sure your printer knows what type of paper to use. We're getting calls left and right now, so we're going to go ahead and go right back over to the phones. We'll start with Dennis from Carmel. Dennis, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I've got a PowerBook G4, and I recently upgraded from 10.1.5 to Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I did that, my battery management system is all goofed up. I mean,
mine too. Got the same machine, same problem.
Do you?
Yeah, did you solve it yet?
No, I mean, I've talked to Apple a number of times.
Yeah.
We went through all the, you know, everything, running it out, and then even resetting the computer.
Right.
And still, it does all kinds of goofy things. I mean, it'll shut down after 30% reading of indicated battery life.
Right.
And then, like, last night, I put it to sleep. It was just in sleep overnight, and it had 50%, and then as soon as I turned it on, the thing just shut off and showed 0% when I plugged it back into the adapter.
Yeah, mine, I've just lost a lot more. Like, I was at, like, an hour of play, and now I'm, like, at half an hour of play. Okay, so there's a few... Apple's not giving really clear instructions on how to deal with this. There is a way to do this. There's two things you do. Did you ever open your keyboard and do the reset on that?
Oh, pull off the keyboard and do it?
Yeah, did you ever open the keyboard?
No.
Okay. So there's one thing you can do right away that will probably help a lot of these problems, and that is to reset. I think I'm not even sure what it is, but it's a little button that will reset your machine. And it's in your PowerBook Titanium?
Yes.
Okay.
But there's a reset button on the back flap, not that one. You're not talking about that one.
No.
Oh, okay.
This one's going to erase your... Erase some hardware storage on your machine. It will reset your battery, for example. So what you want to do is you want to shut down your machine. Actually, run your battery out to as empty as you know that it can run. So run it until it shuts it, until it puts it to sleep. Then plug in your power adapter and get out of sleep mode and then shut your computer down.
Right.
Pull off the battery adapter. There's two little tabs next to the escape key and next to the eject key on your keyboard. They look like little spacers. You can pull those down. When you pull those both down and with your fingernails lift up on the keyboard will pop up.
Right.
Do not pull it off all the way. Just kind of tilt it forward. I'm doing it right now while it's on. Over on the right hand, next to the power button, but underneath the keyboard, is a little tiny button you can push. Hold that down for 15 seconds. Then plug your computer in to power and push the power button. And then let it charge all the way. And see if that helps. You're going to have to reset your battery, of course, but it will probably prompt you to do that.
Okay.
I mean, your time, your clock. Okay?
Okay, so at the point that I run the battery completely down,
yeah.
You're saying
shut down.
Do not plug in the power adapter yet. Pull the keyboard off, reset it, and then plug it in.
Yeah, don't charge it yet. Run it all the way down, and then shut it down.
Yeah.
Make sure it's off, and then push that little button and hold it down for 15 seconds, and then boot your machine up with the power adapter on.
Okay.
And what will probably happen? Actually, no, without the power adapter. Sorry, try to boot it without the power adapter. It's very possible that more battery life will be on the computer. But in any case, then charge it from there normally and see what happens.
You know, I haven't been able to get anything. Once it shuts off, I can't. I have to just... Sometimes, well, this morning, I put the power adapter or tried to start it back up, and it wouldn't start.
I
had to shut the thing completely off. I had to force it by holding down the power button.
Yeah, well, then do that. Make sure it's off when you do this.
Okay.
And reset that with that. I think it's the PZIF or something like that. John would know, but he's not here. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, bye, Dennis. All right, we're going to go ahead and shoot over to Chris in Santa Cruz. Chris, welcome to GeekSpeak. No, let's see. Dean.
Hello?
Dean?
Yeah.
Welcome to GeekSpeak.
I just wanted to say on the mail, the guy, he couldn't retrieve his mail in OS9.
Yes, yes.
Something he might try in the interim while he's waiting for you to
mm-hmm.
source this is In the documents folder, and it depends upon which version of 9 he's running, but
okay.
Let's say he's running 9.1 or something, okay, or 9.2. If he goes into the documents folder in his hard drive,
mm-hmm.
There should be a folder called Netscape or whatever.
Okay, so it's not in preferences, it's in documents.
Well, there is one in preferences, but the one in the documents folder should have his profile.
Okay.
And he should be able to open that with like a Latin's expander.
Okay.
There's like a Buffett file in there. And if not, if he can't find it in there, there's also another folder, which is in the Internet folder.
Okay.
If he goes into the Internet folder in the Internet applications under whatever, I think he said he was using Netscape, was
it? Yeah, Netscape 6.
Yeah, Netscape 6. There should be a folder, Netscape 6 folder in there.
Okay.
And
it could be in there.
And in that folder, he should find all the different components and XYZ of his
email. So there's the exploration to do, to go into documents and look at for Netscape or go into Internet applications, applications on Internet.
In the Internet folder and then in the Internet applications and, you know, in his Netscape 6 folder.
Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for the call, Dean.
Yeah, and if that doesn't work, then it also depends upon whether he saved any of the messages to his hard drive or not.
Right.
If the messages were saved to his hard drive, that's one thing. If they were left on the server, then
it was pop, so it should be down. There should be copies on his machine. He wasn't using IMAP, so it should be.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much, Dean, for the call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. We're going to shoot now to email now. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have an email from Gabby. In Santa Cruz?
Gabby.
She even said Miles knows how to pronounce my name properly. Of course, Miles isn't hooked up right now.
How you doing, Gaboodle?
What's up, Gabby? Okay, what's he
all right, for? He wants to know, do CF1 and CF2 flashcards differ in physical appearance?
Yes.
They certainly do. CF1 cards are about 3 millimeters thick, a little more than 3 millimeters, and CF2 cards are about 5 millimeters thick.
So there you go. what does that really mean?
He's being told that CF1 flashcards from his digital camera will work in his handheld that supports CF2 and
that's
vice
true.
Versa.
Mm.
No. CF1 cards will work in CF2 slots, but you cannot put a CF2 card in a CF1 slot.
That's right. And almost all CF cards are of type 1 unless it's like hard drive or something special, and you will definitely see that it's called CF2.
Right.
So most likely the person that told you this was correct, that card will work in both devices because a CF1 will
work
in
the CF2. As long as the device supports CF2, then you can use type 1 or type 2 cards.
Right? There you go. Great. And his name was Gabby.
Her name.
Her name was Gabby. See, now I screwed up. All right, cool. Thanks for the email. Let's see. I'm all over the place. We'll go to Santa Cruz with Ray. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello, yes. You're on air.
Hi, this is Ray. I have a question regarding a show you did with the virus protection.
Sure.
I forget what that virus program was called that you guys recommended a couple weeks ago. But in any case, when I went to download it, I downloaded fine. When I went to install it, it gave me an error message saying could not find shell DLL. And wouldn't go anywhere from there. And I tried to search it on the net, and I couldn't figure it out.
Shell.dll?
Yeah.
Geeks?
I don't even remember what we recommended.
What
we were recommending AVG scan, I believe.
Yeah,
that fits right.
I got to say, I'm the lone dissenter there. I don't recommend that.
Yeah, but you recommend a paid application, right?
I do. Norton.
Yeah, we were just talking about free ones. So, yeah. If you're paying for it, then sure.
The deal is, you know, GeekSpeak is a show on KOSP. KOSP is a nonprofit. Therefore, a nonprofit radio station, a public radio station, is restricted in some ways from doing things like promoting certain products, promoting commercialism. So what we did when we were recommending applications on the website were to recommend ones that are free, thinking that that's the best way to go about it.
Well, that and we're also cheap.
And we're cheap. So,
and I got to say, I've been reviewing a bunch of antivirus applications for a magazine called Easy Tech Guide in San Francisco. Uh-huh. So I've actually played with a bunch of these, including AVG. And
Sean's opinion, not QSPs or Geek Speaks, but Sean's opinion is go with Symantec's Norton antivirus. And you can pick that up pretty much anywhere. It's a CD. You grab it, you install it. It's going to have to connect to confirm it. And it's pretty cheap. It's worth it. It goes for a year.
But as far as that shell DLL problem, that's
bad.
It's a system library. The fact that it's causing an error on a program, I've never seen problems with it. I mean, I've installed that antivirus program on Windows 98 and XP both. I've never seen that error. So I'm worried that there's something else going on with your system. Not necessarily a virus or anything like that, but just a general problem.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know if
unfortunately, your cell phone is cutting out, so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you, Ray. Okay. But thank you for the call. Again, our recommendation actually is to go with...
Well, I would want to know if he gets that error every time he just runs AVG or something else.
Yeah, the thing is, you'd probably want to run like a Windows install, right? Or if you go to Microsoft.com's update, windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and run that, that might help you out as well. Let's go ahead and take this call kind of out of line, but from Amsterdam, Lee, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello, this is Lee. I've got a question on Windows Explorer.
Okay.
My friends also call it Windows Exploder, and that's the problem that I'm having.
It's exploding?
Constantly. I've spent weeks on this. I've reinstalled the operating system. I've gone and figured out exactly which drivers from VIA I should download, and have done all of this on a fresh machine. And I'm at a complete loss. I think maybe it's some network setting.
Now, you're talking about Internet Explorer?
Windows Explorer.
Okay, so the shell.
And the only clue that I have is that when it crashes and it starts to restart, it says I'm going to write everything to a file. So I've dug that file up from Dr. Watson.
Yeah, that one. Unless
you're a programmer.
It says that I've got an exception number, and it gives me an access violation.
Or rather, even if you are a programmer, unless you have the debugging code in front of you, it's not going to help.
An access violation, that could be... anything.
Now this is Windows. This is Windows XP.
Windows 2000.
Windows 2000. Okay.
Do you have the install disks?
Yeah.
Well, that's one way to go about it. Just reinstall it.
Yeah,
well,
that's what I've done. But I've done
an operating system.
I've done it on a fresh machine.
Have you tried?
A new machine.
One clue that I have is because the machine was working for a long time just fine, is that one of the patches from Microsoft basically did something to one of the drivers, and it's just not going
on. When you said you did it on a fresh machine, what do you mean? You got another computer?
I backed everything up and just installed everything fresh, so really there was no extra...
Oh, the same machine. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very possible this is a memory...
It's a hardware problem.
I bet you anything it's a hardware problem. How much memory do you have in this machine?
A gigabyte.
Okay.
500 megabyte chips. Can I test for memory?
Just pull all the memory and run with one piece at a time.
Well, he only has two.
You have two pieces of memory.
So shut the machine down, open it up, pull one out, start it up, and see what happens.
And if you get the same problem, then swap the memory and see if that fixes it.
The only issue you might encounter is that some motherboards require paired memory, but most likely the consumer machine, you're not going to run into that problem.
Yeah, this.
I bought the two at the same time.
Right. The concern is that some high-end boards require memory cards to both be in. But you don't have that problem.
Actually, a quick question. Does this happen right away, or is this after you've been using the system for a while and, like, loaded up a bunch of programs?
Basically, I've got two drives that are, at the moment, because I've reinstalled it so many times, I've got two drives that are mapped, so the network drives or shared folders that have been mapped.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I click on Windows Explorer... and basically it starts to list all the drives off to the left, that's when it crashes.
Ah, remove your network shares and see if you get the same problem.
I've done that, and I still
you
okay.
still do.
Crash.
Okay.
I bet you anything it's memory. Just pull
okay.
one. Just
it. Well, that makes sense.
Or hardware.
Because when I've done the fresh install, let's say a new install, I'd crash, but it would be completely different. It would be like when I'm scrolling, the screen would just go freeze in the middle of it. Like, you could see it was right in the middle of a redraw,
right.
And it would just freeze.
Yeah, my guess, I don't think it's RAM. If it were RAM, I think it would be a lot more random as to what would cause it. He seems to be having
that's what I was
fairly
thinking.
Consistent. It's still a hardware problem. It's still something, I think, bad, but I don't necessarily know that it's RAM.
Well, try the RAM thing if it is.
I don't know that. The last problem.
Please let us know so we can laugh at Miles.
It could be video.
It could be video.
With that last problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You might want to try swapping your video card.
If you got an extra, it doesn't hurt to try.
Well, for that matter, do you have the newest drivers for that video card?
Get the newest drivers for the video card and the motherboard. That's definitely.
I've done all that.
Yeah, then.
And the motherboard's built in, so I don't have any choice.
Right. Well, no, you could install like another video card if you wanted and use the other video card.
Ah.
But that's kind of a. Yeah. Try the memory and cross your fingers.
I mean, you've got a repeatable error, so that's a good thing. It really is, because now you can swap out hardware and see
and
if
once
you can
fix it. You'll know that it's fixed.
Yeah, you'll know
this
what the
is a hardware problem, not a software one.
Well, Lee, thank you for calling from Amsterdam to talk to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
We actually got an email from Patricia, who wants to make a stab at the Epson problem.
Okay.
She says what she's learned from the pros was to use Epson paper only and Epson ink only. HP photo paper, even Kodak paper, are particularly bad. And if he gets the right paper, he might even need to use a separate device.
He wasn't using Epson, though.
It was the Epson 740.
Oh, okay, the 740 one. That's right.
Yeah,
definitely use paper. I mean, that's, of course, what the company's going to say. But, you know, I went to a...
Well, this sounds like Cheese has experience in this.
On Wednesday night, I went to the Coda group, the digital photographer or digital artists group in this area.
Oh, really?
And talked to them, and all of them are using Epson. All of them are using Epson paper, and all of them are using Epson ink. So there's a good case right there. We're going to take a call from Santa Cruz again. Chris, welcome back.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling back. Okay, what's your question?
Yes, I have a, I bought one of those AirTunes Express, Airport Express.
Oh, yeah, what do you think of it?
Well, I haven't been able to get it to work.
Okay.
The thing is, I have a Linksys router, wireless router, the WR something 54G, the current one, and it... From what I've read, there should be two ways of getting the two to communicate. One, I keep reading that people have been able to get that router to act like an airport express, the airport base station, which I haven't been able to do. And the other is that you can, from what I've read, it seems like you can get it to, use the airport express as the
base station
as the base station and then get the router to connect to it, but I haven't been able to get either to work.
Let me ask you this. Let's see. What do you want to do with the express? Just play music through it?
Actually, to play music and to use as a printer.
Okay. Let's clarify what this little thing is. This is a kind of a wallwart-type plug-in device. It has an Ethernet jack on it. It has a wireless access point software on it, so you can actually use it as a Wi-Fi connector, and it has an audio output, and the audio output can plug into a stereo system, and on your computer you connect Wi-Fi to it or Ethernet to it, doesn't really matter, and you can using iTunes you can play music to that device, so therefore you can have your computer in one room and you can have this thing next to your stereo in another room, and then you can tell it to print. You can tell it to play music through it. You can also use this thing. It has a USB plug, and you can use it as a remote printer, a shared network printer. What the issue is that you have a wireless access point in your home, and that's how you're using things. And you want this device to be available through that network, and that's what you're trying to do, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to be a real hard thing to do. What do you have a Mac?
Yes. Okay. I have a Cube.
Okay, take that little device, plug an Ethernet jack from the Cube to that.
Okay.
Then open up Airport Admin Utility, or maybe it has. Yeah, I think Airport Admin Utility is going to do this. Make sure you have the most recent one, and try to. Are you configuring it that way?
Yeah, I don't. Okay. Every time I open up the utility, I don't get any.
You don't access it.
Plugged in, but I haven't connected it by Ethernet.
Plug it through Ethernet, because what the issue is. Is your cube using Ethernet normally for your network, or is it using wireless?
Yeah, I have the router connected by Ethernet.
Okay, so unconnect the router. So your computer and your little new device, your Express, are connected directly with an Ethernet. And then open up your admin utility. Now, when you're in that mode, you should be able to see that device, and then you can configure all its settings. And one of the configures you can be able to use is make it not an access point, but an access receiver, if you will, or a client. And that's what you want to do to manage it. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck on it.
Thanks
for the call the second time, even. Well, I believe we are done with call. Well, you know what? Let's see if we can take P Pete from Felton. Pete, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, geeks, how you doing?
Hi. Go ahead and do it quick, because we're running out of time.
I had an eMachine 550, had a 20 gigabyte Western Digital drive on it with a backup on the secondary ribbon. They both got toasted with a power supply problem.
Both the drives got toasted?
Both drives got toasted. I mean, neither one of them even spins up now.
Oh, man. You have a new power supply, right?
Actually, I have a new computer.
Okay. All right.
I was quoted like 500 to, actually 1200 to 2700 bucks to retrieve the information. You guys got any local resources?
That's about the right price, but we got a trick for you.
What's that?
Get another drive that has the same electronics and swap out the electronics.
Yeah, we did that. Didn't work. Actually, what it does now is it clicks.
Clicking is bad.
It doesn't spin up, but it clicks.
You got to spend the money if you want the data. Sorry.
Right answer.
I've used OnTrack before. They do.
You
don't
have a clean room in your garage or anything?
Try OnTrack. It's possible that
OnTrack data retrieval.
Yeah.
OnTrack.
And it's a software package, huh?
No. If the drive is physically damaged, you need to send it to them. And they can take the data off and put it on DVDs.
Okay.
And Sean, you've liked that company?
Yeah, it'll cost you a fair amount of money. So.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete, for the call. Right, sorry for the data loss.
No worries.
Bye bye. Make sure everyone have backups. That's, of course, a necessity in the world of computer usage. It's not about if the hard drive will fail, it's when. Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak. And thank you for listening and calling into GeekSpeak. And emailing us. Thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. Coming up following GeekSpeak is Open Road, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell, and thanks for listening.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Israeli officials say at least 31 people are confirmed dead in bombings at two Egyptian resorts filled with Israeli tourists. 38 people are still missing, and more than 100 are believed buried in the rubble. The BBC's Matthew Price reports from the Israeli-Egyptian border as Israelis stream out of the Sinai.
They are leaving in their thousands. Backpackers, families with children, the elderly pulling suitcases along in the searing heat. The seemingly coordinated attacks already destroying not just the lives of so many, but also the livelihoods of those who live in Sinai and depend on tourism. At the Taba Hilton, Israeli search teams allowed to cross into Egypt continue their grim search for survivors. Body bags cover those already found dead. Israel is asking who did this. Which war is this? The Palestinian conflict, the battle with neighboring Arab states, or the global war against terror? Already one Israeli minister has suggested he believes this bears all the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda.
The BBC's Matthew Price. British hostage Kenneth Bigley has been beheaded by his captors in Iraq, according to his brother, Philip Bigley. The British government has also confirmed Bigley's death. Britain's Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, condemned the killing. Straw says the British government exchanged messages with Bigley's captors in the days before he was killed. A 64-year-old Kenyan environmentalist has won the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize. Wangari Maathai campaigned against government-backed forest clearing in Kenya in the late 1980s and 90s. She's the leader of the Green Belt movement, which has tried to improve the environment and also empower women. Today's jobs report from the U.S. Labor Department is providing more fuel for the rival presidential candidates as they get ready for tonight's debate in St. Louis. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Democratic presidential hopeful John Kerry called today's jobs numbers another disappointing report for America's workers. The Labor Department says just 96,000 new jobs were added last month. That's less than a third of what was forecast by the Bush administration earlier this year, and not enough to keep pace with growth in the country's workforce. The Bush campaign has created a new television commercial boasting of nearly 2 million jobs added in the last year. The Kerry campaign is quick to point out, though, that since President Bush took office, the nation's lost more than 1.5 million private sector jobs, the first time that's happened since the Great Depression. Scott Horsley, NPR News, St. Louis.
Checking Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is down 49 points at 10,075 in active trading of 803 million shares. The Nasdaq is down 17 points at 1931. The S&P 500 is down 5. This is NPR News.